Welcome to Calcio FC, your weekly dose of Italian football culture. This week we discuss how the latest round of results affects the Serie A title race, and our man in Rome joins us to talk all things Lazio and Roma. But first, with domestic football taking a break, Destination Calcio writers Emmett Gates and Dan Cancian join me, David Farini, to talk about Luciano Spalletti's Italy and the UEFA Nations League quarterfinal against Germany at the San Siro. Gents, that Luciano Spalletti squad hasn't made too many changes from the last time he sent Italy out there. They lost 3-1 to France on that occasion, but they have made it through to the quarterfinals. They're going to take on Germany. Some key players in this squad. What are you seeing there, guys? Obviously, Retegi selects himself. The likes of Barella, Tonali, scintillating form from those guys. At the back, Buongiorno is fit again, should be there. There are a few fringe players there. We'll have a chat about why he may have brought in some of the younger brigade. Donnarumma, captain. Vicario, decent. He's probably second best, even if he's not having the best period with Tottenham. But yeah, still maybe Meret, third choice in this squad for you guys.
Yeah.
Vicario's ahead of
him. I mean, yeah, second or third. You know, I think they're interchangeable, but I think it's clear Donnarumma is the standout.
Usual suspects, Di Lorenzo. You've got Ricci, who's made himself a mainstay of the squad. We've got Rovella in there. It's probably going to be, the understudy to... Well, there's no Locatelli, so Rovella is that player, isn't he?
Yeah.
Deservedly so as well. I think
Moise Kean up forward as well. Yeah, deservedly so, as you say, with Rovella. And Moise Kean not continuing that rich vein of goal-scoring form, but still is... second most informed striker. Lorenzo Luca also getting a call up. That's a different kind of look if you want to throw him on the last 15 minutes, if you want to attack aerially.
Yeah, for crosses. You know, him and Retegi have scored 5 headers apiece, which is the most in Serie A this season.
A bit of Route 1 approach.
Yeah, exactly. Just get it in the mixer, man.
Yeah, put it in the mixer, see what happens. Well, look, Italy have fallen down on occasion. We've seen in the Ciro Immobile days that you can just not have a plan B. You just send him up there and he's isolated. Yeah. He's got 2 players on him and he's totally cancelled out of the match. And that might be what you want to do as a coach if you want to play wide, if you've got the players to play wide.
Yeah,
because Italy don't have the best wingers in the world. Chiesa's no way, shape or form the man he used to be. Unfortunately for Azzurri fans. So some fringe players there brought into the squad, 3 players that were worth a call up, but didn't get one, guys. We put a story out this week.
Yeah. While we're talking about wingers, Italy have got a really good winger and a really good form, which is Riccardo Sollini, but he's been left out. And I mean,
you're wearing the Bologna shirt, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
no bias here.
I'm not a Bologna fan.
He's getting paid by Saputo.
No, but, you know, Spalletti's obviously forgotten more about football than 11 now, but you've got the question, what does Orsolini have to do to get a call up? Because he's got 10 goals in Serie A this season, 4 assists. That's 14 goal involvements, as they call them these days, which is the most by an Italian player, aside from Retegi and Keane. And I mean, it's been superb. The reason why Bologna are where they are is, not exclusively down to him, but he's had a brilliant season. Everyone thought last season under Motta, okay, Motta's sort of approach gets the best out of Orsolini. Then he had a very slow start under Italiano this season. He scored, I think, 1 goal in the first 6 or 7 games. And everyone thought, okay, he's being found out at this level. But he's come back brilliantly. And he's had 2 separate injuries already this season, and his numbers could have been even better. And going back to what you were saying about having a plan B, it's great to have a plan B, but if you have like someone like Luca in the box, you need someone who can actually put the ball in the box. And Orsolini can do that and he can provide goals. I just don't get why he's being left out.
I think Orsolini, I'm obviously not a mind reader, but from Spalletti's point of view, I would say that he's obviously called up Politano, who he knows from his Napoli days. And Politano is Orsolini and Politano are very samey. And that they like to get it on the left, caught in.
Who can play it right wing back, though? I don't think Orsolini can.
No, that's it.
Is he going to go with a 3-5-2 Spalletti like he did against France? Or is he going to play the 4-3-3? I mean, and that may be an indication that he might play a 3-5-2.
I get the point about Politano, and I agree, obviously he knows him, but you call up the likes of Daniel Maldini, who, let's be honest, is promising. He may well be the player of the future, but at the minute, I don't think he's done enough to justify a call up.
But is it, again, a formational issue here where Maldini he does maraud, but he's mainly central, doesn't really play on the flanks much. Could he be a second striker? Could he be an attacking midfielder? If you've got five across that middle, will Maldini jump in at some point in the game, or would he play next to Retegui, for example? They're both at Atalanta now. Is there something going on that maybe we can't foresee?
I just think it would be what, because Orsolini played as an out and out right winger under Motta last season, and this season under Italiano is playing, you know, wide right, but in a 4-2-3-1. So, you know, it's somewhat more of an attacking midfielder role.
Who would you bring him out for? Would you get rid of Politano?
I wouldn't have Maldini in the team.
You wouldn't have Maldini. Yeah, okay.
Not because he doesn't deserve it, but I don't think, you know, I don't think he's good enough.
He hasn't had the minutes.
Has Maldini played much since he moved to Atlanta?
He was injured for a while. Okay. He suffered an injury.
Yeah, exactly. So. That's what I mean. I don't think he's done enough. I'm not saying that he's not talented, of course. I mean, I think moving to Atlanta, as we said last month, would be great for him. But purely on current form, he obviously has his reasons for it. I just think it's all particularly because Bologna have been brilliant this season, the second half of the season, but they're not a big club, you know. No disrespect. They are a great story, but they're not an established, it's not what you would call a big club. And for someone to be doing so well at club level for Bologna and miss out, seems a bit odd, but hey, I'm sure the proof will be in the pudding ultimately.
Well, my point may be totally invalid here, because it might not be about bringing experience in with Politano, because he's brought in Ruggeri from Atalanta. He's a left back by trade. Now, you've written about a player in particular. Tell us, it's actually one of his teammates.
Yeah, so my choice is Davide Zappacosta, who I've been a big fan of this season. Obviously, you know, Zappacosta's 32. He's been around a while. He hasn't played for Italy since 2018, which I think is a bit criminal. But especially under Gasperini in the last couple of seasons, this is obviously his second stint at Atalanta. But he's very versatile. He can play left wing back, left midfield, right wing back. Italian managers of the past have kind of thrived on having those utility men. If you think back to Gianluca Passato or Angelo Di Livio or Alessandro Birindelli, who can play, you can plug and play them in six different positions. And I think Zappacosta could offer that. Yes, he's not one for the future, but I feel like in games like this against Germany, where it is a young squad, a lot of inexperience, Zappacosta's versatility and his experience, he's won two European trophies with Atalanta and Chelsea. He could be valuable.
And with DiMarco out, he could be a player to step
in. Exactly. And he's got five goals this season. He's in the best goal scoring form of his career at Atalanta on the left. So it's, as you said, with DiMarco absent, why not give him?
Do you think maybe he rates Cambiaso as a like you said, Zappacosta's versatile, can play left, right? Does he see Cambiaso as a player that can slot in? Also, Di Lorenzo has done that in the past. Yeah. We've seen it down the left back.
Yeah, I agree with that, mate. I think he deserves a call up. But as far as he's concerned, I definitely think it's a case of the point we were making earlier about having to look forward rather than at the present. I think if Eddie called up Zappacosta, a lot of people will be criticising him for having like a short-term approach as opposed to, like, you know.
But again, the argument could be made, if he wants to win a quarterfinal, then you bring in some experienced players. And of course, it's the balance. You don't just want to bring in, is the argument, that's an age-old argument. Do you bring in the seasoned professionals and not give youth a go? Is there a balance? I think it's a balanced squad in terms of age. Calafiori could play at left back as well.
Yeah,
so that's another player. Bastoni also plays on the left side.
Yeah, that's where he's been playing for Arsenal this season, actually, Calafiori.
Yeah, so there you go. I think he's got it covered, but on form, you'd probably pick Zappacosta over Ruggeri, but that could be a developmental, is the right word, approach. And look, I'll go to my player, Rolando Mandragora at Fiorentina. Now, he definitely is an underdog to be called up. I don't think it's about talent. I think it might be about big game mentality. There could be a few ghosts in the closet with past long-term injuries, proving himself on the big stage. Usually he is a goal scorer. He can hit with both feet. And he's lethal from outside the box. And that's why I believe he should be in the squad. Yes, Italy have Barella, who can strike from long range. Tonali's good, maybe doesn't have the most thunderous strike in the world, but he's a very good tactical player. Fratesi isn't the kind of player that I'm thinking of here. Fratesi is more of that running midfielder, that give and go, sprint. He's very fast. He can sprint. Mandragora is that TikTok midfield, side to side, kind of like Orovella meets Barella kind of player. And with 15 minutes to go, if you're searching for a goal and also a set piece player, that he can take corners, he can take free kicks, both feet again. Some of his past goals have been absolutely ruthless for the likes of Udinese and Torino. When he hits them, they stay hit, and he's that kind of player. He hasn't played since 2018 as well, and that was under Roberto Mancini, made his debut. Only ever played once. That was against France in a friendly, and he had a back line that was not that flattering. It was De Sciglio, Caldara, and D'Ambrosio in that back line.
Well, I mean, that's Italian heritage right there.
That's what they need to build. Spalletti, what are you doing? So,
well, I think when you look at that midfield, the players, there's not a lot of options. If there's one or two injuries, then...
Well, Cazadei obviously is a player that's coming through. FIFA under 20 star, scored a lot of goals there. It does have that in his locker, but... at this level, coming into the senior team now. At under 21, he didn't have the same impact as he had at under 20. Couldn't break into the Chelsea setup. Did well in other teams in England. Did okay. You know, let's be honest. He didn't set the world on fire.
Yeah.
He's doing well at Torino. Scored a couple of goals recently for Torino in Serie A. So congratulations to him. It's good to see him getting a call up.
Yeah.
But Mandragora at 27 years of age, I still believe he has time. So it's not like he's 32, 35. It's not a Ciccio Caputo being brought in because you've got no one else. But the thing is, on the other hand, Italy's strength is in midfield because you've got Tonali and Barella. And who would you want to swap those guys out for if you could bring in other international players?
Jordan Henderson. It's just been
Brian Cassandi. Italy's Jordan
and
Henderson.
To make a wish in the end of his career, maybe. okay, so I would probably bring out Cazadei, to be honest. And that's only because
you giving him the big build-up. Yeah.
And that's my point. Build him up to say he's doing well, but Mandragora has scored against Inter and Juventus.
A good goal against Juve on Sunday.
And he can score headers, and it's about what he can bring without feeling nerves against the German side. There's a big history there, which we're going to get into, Italy and Germany. This is not... a game against, you know, Luxembourg in Group C of the UEFA Nations League. This is a genuine chance for Italy to maintain that record. They never lost to Germany in a competitive game. I'm not sure if the Nations League, I guess it qualifies these days, but last time they played them, they lost 5-2 to Germany in the Nations League. And that was in 2022 under Mancini. That's when he was bringing through the Njontos and the Gattis. Those kind of players. I think even Zedbin was in the squad at that point. Not kidding there. There were two call-ups from Serie B, from Frosinone back then. Quickly, anyone done any research on Germany? And
If you look at their squad, there's a few standout names. Obviously, Karim Adeyemi. You've got Leroy Sané. You've got Musiala is there. But it's a very... it's a young German side that Nagelsmann, you know, has chosen. Obviously, you have Joshua Kimmich... is there, but there are three strikers, for example. They're 29, 28, 24. They're having breakout seasons with Mainz and Stuttgart. So it's not a vintage German side by any stretch of imagination, but the Germans are probably thinking the same of Italy.
Yeah.
It's not a vintage Italian team, but it'll be interesting to see how both teams get on.
It's about seeing how shaky both teams are at the back.
I think the German football has also moved away from traditional striker in the way we've always known them, like the likes of Klinsmann, Werner, or closer. You know, and you've got the likes of, you know, Florian Wirtz, who's not been playing because he's injured, unfortunately. Absolutely and lovely player.
Yeah, Kai Havertz is the same.
Yeah, Kai Havertz again, you know, he plays with front, but he's not a striker.
Yeah.
He's not a traditional striker.
A lot of attacking midfielders.
Yeah, you've got the likes of Musiala, who I think is just, he's an absolutely electric player to watch. What I think is Germany are doing really well is that they have a conveyor belt of talent, and, you know, they are able to regenerate and, you know, rejuvenate teams. And you're often, you know, you often wonder who are these players, but then by the time the big tournament comes around, you know who they are because they've been delivering week in, week out. And
Well, after losing to Spain in the European Championships, they've won, beaten Hungary 5-0, and then... they got the 1-1 draw with them most recently. That's both games in the UEFA Nations League, all these games in the UEFA Nations League. Netherlands 2-2, Bosnia They beat them 2-1 away, then 7-0 in Germany. They got a 1-0 win over the Netherlands at home. So they're undefeated in the NL, UEFA Nations League. Is that what they call it? So it is a tournament starting to get a little bit more oomph about it. People starting to care a bit more about the nations. Because I think that's where they saw it going. And it's a chance for teams that wouldn't ordinarily win something, a Euros or a World Cup, a chance for them to get something.
It's the League Cup of international football.
Yeah. Is it the League? Yeah, it's true.
Slightly better than international friendlies.
Yeah.
Who's going to be the difference maker? I'm actually going to the game, by the way. I'll be in Milan for this. So let's see what happens there. But I might run into Adriano Del Monte, friend of the show. Difference maker for Italy.
Donnarumma.
He is.
He's been... it was very shaky early this season. It's only actually kept 4 clean sheets in League One, which is not that many when you think about it.
Yeah, and considering who he plays for.
Exactly. But I think he's coming into form just at the right time. He was superb against Liverpool last week. Obviously saved 2 penalties in the shootout. PSG now have got a great chance to win the Champions League, and he's definitely one of the reasons.
He's a big part of that, yeah.
Yeah. I was there for me, Sandro Tonali. I think he's been incredible for Newcastle, and he's really developed since leaving Milan.
Yeah, he's the most Pirlo-esque player that Italy has. So Barella, also a superb player. Yeah. So those two impactful in different ways in that midfield, and that's where Italy
I'm curious to see Tonali playing for Italy, because I think Tonali is at his best in Newcastle when he's got the likes of Julinton and Bruno Guimaraes next to him. Probably the best midfielder in England. I think there is an argument to be made about that. But obviously, Italy's midfield is very different, both in terms of skill sets, in terms of physicality. So it'll be quite intriguing to see how it goes about it.
This is the Calcio FC podcast. You're with me, David Farini. I'm in the studio in London with Emmett Gates and Dan Canty and the Destination Calcio senior writers. We're going to talk about Inter. They're in pole position now, guys, but they've got a tough few fixtures coming up. They've got the Coppa Italia, Italian Cup. It's against Milan, so anything can happen in that. They've got Champions League against Bayern. They've got the first leg away there as well. Potential banana skins in Serie A. We're talking Udinese, Parma, Cagliari, Bologna. So those first three, all relegation threatened teams. Bologna in hot form after that brilliant win over Lazio. Simone Inzaghi, Dan, can he keep the Inter train on the track?
I think he can. I think he's shown last season that he knows how to win the league title. And Inter have got by far the best squad in Serie A. And I think you get to the point now where they are rolling, and to continue your metaphor, it's going to be very difficult to stop this train. They struggled last month against Fiorentina. They lost 3-0. They lost to Juventus a couple of weeks after that. And everyone thought, oh, hang on a minute, maybe they don't have what it takes to win the league. But I think that by now we can... I mean, they do. They've got the best squad, and they're just getting results. The draw in Napoli, yes, they ain't gone there for a bit. Probably lucky to escape at the point, but they beat Atalanta convincingly on Sunday night, and now it's their titles to lose. I've said this for weeks, it's their titles to lose, and there is just nothing to me to suggest that they're going to fall off a cliff. Yes, the fixtures list is difficult because they've got the derby, they've got Bayern, the Champions League. But I think that you're now at the point where fixtures are actually not an hindrance, but it's something that they look forward to build more and more and more momentum going forward.
I mean, that's good for Inter fans. They want to hear that. So, and I guess after that Juventus loss, they've rebounded well. They're looking okay in Serie A now, on top by 3 points. They won the 6-pointer against Atalanta. 7-match unbeaten run now. 6 wins and a draw. That was in Naples. We were there for that one, Emmett and I. So Lex on TikTok says, I wish they beat Inter. They're talking about Atalanta here. Yeah, a few other people do as well. They'd probably want the Scudetto race to endure for a bit longer. A few doubts around Napoli. Inter have only dropped 10 of a possible 36 points this year. It might sound like a lot for Inter, but that's probably the best out of any team. 2 losses there, apart from Roma, they're in the best form, but nowhere in the discussion, maybe on the brink of Europa League discussion at the moment. But 2 losses for Inter this year. Napoli have dropped 13 of 33 points. They've played 1 game less. Inter had the catch-up game with Fiorentina. Just 1 loss to Como for Napoli. So just the 1 loss, it's not too bad. Only 5 wins, though. That's where it's going wrong. The goals have dried up, let's be honest. David Neres is really needed back in that side. Atalanta, though, have dropped 16 of 33 points and only 4 wins, 6 draws. 2 losses have been the Scudetto showdowns. against Napoli and Inter, the six-pointers there, both at home. What's next for Atalanta, Emmett Gates?
I don't know. I feel at this point, I know we have said this previously, that Atalanta are out of the title race. We said that after the Napoli defeat in Bergamo, and then we kind of readjusted our predictions when they smashed Juve 4-0. But I think the wheels of, to use the train metaphor again, David, I think that the wheels are slowly starting to come off after the Adamola Lookman, Gasperini penalty shenanigans and the fallout from that. You know, they beat Empoli 5-1, you know, in Tuscany, but, you know, the form Empoli's in, you know, us three could beat Empoli. And then obviously the win at Juve. I feel like you do kind of get the impression that the end of an era is coming. I think Gasperini, and he's said as much, that I might not remain. His contract expires in the summer of 2026. So technically he does have another year, but you do kind of get the sense, the things that he said, that this may be the end. The next couple of months might be the beginning of the end. He's been linked with Roma. He's been linked even with Juve. He was Juve's Primavera coach way back in the early noughties. So I do feel like Atalanta's, you know, locomotive is starting to buckle as we get into the business end of the season. I do still think they're good enough for the top four. They'll probably finish third, just because I think anywhere from fourth to seventh, the teams in that area are all inconsistent. And Atalanta themselves are now starting to show that inconsistency, but I do feel like we can rule them out of the title race.
They've got the tougher run of the top three, don't
exactly.
they?
Exactly. They've got Lazio, Milan, Fiorentina, Bologna. Parma. You know, Parma's coming.
That's a match day 38 game as well, and Parma could be on struggle street then, really scrapping for some points.
So Atalanta needed to win the games that they end up losing.
At least not lose to Napoli.
Because they have the tougher run out of the three teams. You know, Inter obviously of Europe, Napoli don't, and Atalanta now don't, but they had the harder running, so they had to win all their matches to get to this point. They haven't, and I think we can sadly rule them out.
Yeah. So the locomotive could be leaving Bergamo. That's another train reference there. If Trainline or Frecciarossa want to get on board and sponsor the podcast, please get in touch. But on Gasperini there, Michael Laurenti writes on YouTube, I definitely understand his impact in Serie A, also the past years in European play, but he wants to question if he went to a bigger club without having the theme of being an underdog, do you think his coaching style would match with the Juventus, Inter or Milan? He's the king of Bergamo. Big clubs always take that spotlight. Can he?
We know the answer to that because he was at Inter Milan.
Yeah, he only lasted, what, five, six games,
yeah,
didn't
exactly,
he?
Yeah, exactly.
And it was banter years. Let's go. Post-Mourinho.
Yeah, sure. I don't think you can define him by those 2 months he was Inter Milan. But as we were saying off air, there is definitely an element of having a different degree of expectations. Placed on your shoulders. He very much is someone who needs, like all managers need time to an extent, but I think his football is so complex. His players need to be completely buying into that, and I don't think he has the time to implement that at a club like Inter Milan or Juventus
big
or AC Milan.
Big egos.
Exactly. I think on a personal level, obviously he can be a little bit abrasive. We've seen that with...
Yeah.
You know, he fell out with Papu Gomez after them two working together for years. And obviously his comments with Lookman essentially throwing him under the bus in public, which he should never do. Like, that's, you know, managerial 101. Always publicly defend your players, even if they did something wrong. I think the thing with Gasperini is he likes to get, not unknowns, but players that he can easily mould and adapt. And a lot of players at big clubs aren't willing to do that.
Yeah, they're not. And also, players that want to prove themselves. Yeah,
exactly.
And also, if you move to a big club, you're likely to inherit big profile players that you may not necessarily want. Atalanta, the players you didn't want were happy to sort of like sell them on because they wanted the game like, you know, blank canvas to design and to create his own side. You're not going to do that at Milan. You're not going to be able to do that at Inter, but you're not going to be able to do that at Juventus because they've got certain players who are there, they've been there for long, and the club may be reluctant to sell them or just unwilling to sell them.
Yeah, well, credit where credit's due. He's got really good results from Matteo Retegi. Yeah. Look at him now, he's starring for Italy. Obviously, credit to Genoa for bringing him over. Credit to Roberto Mancini for finding him.
Yeah, Tigre.
Him. Boca weren't even using him. So Tigre, who's on loan, now he's at Atalanta after that road through. And Gasperini was able to harness even more, squeeze even more out of him.
When you look at Di Catalata, complete flop at Milan.
Yeah,
he had only one season, but he didn't look like a Serie A quality player.
A better player.
Yeah. Two years of Gasperini, and he looks not a world beater, but he looks oceans better than what he was at Milan.
Zappacosta as well, what he's got out of him.
Yeah, well, exactly. I was going to say Zappacosta was going to be my suggestion because, you know, at Chelsea he looked like a barely Premier League standard right back, and Atalanta is completely reborn, you know.
Yeah, and he's versatile now, Zappacosta. Yeah. Can play on the left, can play on the right.
What I will say with Gasperini, you can see why big clubs would be attracted to him because the way he changes slightly, he gets his players to bind to his ethos, and he's got this. His football is superb. When his football is in full flow, I don't think there is a better brand football in Europe at the minute. So you can see why that would be attractive to a big club.
Yeah.
But by the same time, I think like the reasons that make him attractive are also what will make life so difficult for him at a big club because, as we just said, you know, it takes time for him and he may not get the time to implement.
Yeah, as a coach that needs time. And as you said, they want players that can buy into the system, into the ethos. Yeah. And that's what Antonio Conte is doing at Napoli. What's next for them? Milan, Bologna away after the international break. Then seven teams in the bottom half. They've got the easiest run out of the top three. Can Inter hold on with 9 matches remaining, 27 points up for grabs of those 9 games remaining in the Serie A season? Or can the Rome-based sides do them in and help out the contenders, Atalanta and Napoli? We'd love to see that go down to the wire. Two of the big clubs, the two most recent Scudetto winners. Inter want to hold on to the title with Simone Inzaghi there, but we'll see how they go. And coming up next, we've got someone based in Rome that's going to join us to talk about Lazio and Roma. We're going to bring in our Rome-based contributor now. Alistair McKenzie has joined Destination Calcio of late. We met up with him when we were in Rome for Lazio-Napoli. What a game that was.
Yeah.
And Emmett and I were there. Dan, meet Alistair. Alistair, meet the Calcio FC guys here. We're based in London. You're in the Italian capital. How are you doing?
Yeah, all good, guys. It's the sun is shining brightly outside. I've had to actually bring down the shutters for this recording because it's so sunny today. Not to rub it in when you're back in London, but yeah, it's been very, very nice recently.
Well, Scottish blood, it's probably too sunny for you in Rome.
Hiding inside. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How long have you been there now? Tell the viewers a little bit about yourself for those that don't know Alistair.
Well, there were two big arrivals in 2018. It was Cristiano Ronaldo and myself both arriving in Italy at the same time.
I remember the drama around your transfer. So,
yeah, exactly. That's what everyone remembers about that summer. I was working for a newspaper in Scotland for a couple of years and then decided I always wanted to kind of make the move out here full time. I spent a year here as a student back in 2010 as well, but like a lot of you guys and your listeners, it was kind of brought up on a diet of Channel 4 Football Italian and the rest of it. So I've been a disciple ever since. And yeah, Rome was always the kind of place that called me the loudest and decided to give it a go. And still here 7 years later. So it's been a good move and it's a great city and chaotic place at times, but been able to kind of make a life here. And now, think of it as home, to be honest.
Yeah, that's a blueprint to life, isn't it? Move to Rome and do that. You've obviously got Calcio in your DNA, like Dan and Emmett and myself here. So it's great to have you on board. You wrote for us about Claudio Ranieri and Roma. Tell us a little bit about that article and your thoughts on maybe the future of a potential maybe re-signing of Claudio.
Well, it's just this story is an interesting one as it's unfolded because obviously Ranieri, when he first arrived, it's the emotional appointment, which was kind of necessary after they really messed up with the Juric appointment. He was kind of the only guy they had left to go to who was going to placate the fans. But also, obviously, this being his third spell, it was an opportunity to get someone in who knows the club and who they felt like could take control of this situation and the protests that were going on at the time and all these things. It's a very difficult, completely unique atmosphere, I would say, Roma. And so the importance of having someone, even if you need to bring them out of retirement, who understands that atmosphere, that passion and so on. I think you can't underplay that. Obviously, I don't think any of us expected this run of form to happen. I mean, the team now is completely unrecognizable from the one we saw in the first 4 months of this season, when a lot of my Roma supporting friends, to be honest, almost gave up on this team. And he's, you know, not exactly had a huge boost in January in the transfer market or anything. He's just got the best out of the players he's already had. He's simplified their game plan and got them to believe in playing a certain way. And yeah, the piece was kind of based around this idea that he is the man searching for the successor himself. You know, he's stepping into the directorial role at the end of the year, and he is very much being leaned on by the Friedkins, perhaps because they know they can't get this wrong and they want to feel like they're sharing the responsibility of this move slightly with someone who's respected like Ranieri. But it's getting to the point now where it's hard to see who is out there that is going to be able to do a better job than Ranieri currently is. And you'll certainly get sexier appointments. You'll certainly get coaches who have more attractive brands of football. You'll certainly get more exciting coaches and names out there. But in terms of people who will get a better tune out of this squad, a squad they're not going to be able to massively bolster in the summer because of the FFP restrictions around the club, I'm not sure they're going to find anyone better than Ranieri. I'm talking about the club's aim of getting back into the Champions League. That's somewhere they've not been since 2018. It looks pretty unlikely they're going to get there this year, although they've somehow put themselves back in the conversation. And when it comes to that goal, achieving that goal, I think giving Ranieri one extra year as a full season is probably likelier to get them there than taking a gamble, which most of the other names being linked to the job would be.
Let's move on. We know that you are a Roma expert, but you have Lazio in your blood.
Well, just, I guess it harks back to the said glory years of Football Italia in the 90s, and the fact that when I first started watching Serie A was when Eriksen was building that absolutely incredible team. I mean, I enjoyed your guys' pod the other week about Juan Sebastian Verón. I mean, it was just an unbelievable cast of players that were assembled in that time. So I guess you could say it was a kind of form of weird glory hunting in the late 90s, but I did stick with them beyond that when everything completely fell to pieces and pretty much immediately after I started following them. That's it really. It's just been a pretty turbulent club to follow, I guess, in that kind of 25-year span from the heights of that team and the won the Scudetto in 2000 up until now. There's been all sorts of highs and lows, let's say.
Alistair, obviously Marco Baroni has surprised a lot of people this season. You know, he come from Hellas Verona last season. He did a good job, but I don't think many of us expected him to do as well as he's done. What's your take on Baroni this season, and do you think he'll get a second season at Lazio? And what's the general feeling around him from your friends and in the capital?
Taking out the 5-0 against Bologna. Let's pretend that never happened.
Yeah, that aside.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's funny. Obviously, I wrote a pretty glowing and complimentary piece about him, and then 2 days later, they go and lose 5-0.
They did qualify for the Europa League quarters, though. So that's a big thing. As you wrote in that article, it's only the third time since 2003 that they've qualified for, they've gone this deep in a European tournament.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I mean, that was more what the point of that piece was very much framed around the European, what he's done in Europe, because it has been, it can't describe how much apathy had developed around the fan base towards the Europa League, and how little it wasn't even just this thing about feeling like you're above it, which I think a lot of Italian clubs have been guilty of over years. It was more just that they'd been in it so much. This is 11th season since it was rebranded in 2009, the Lazio had been in the tournament, and they just never do anything in it. And it's one embarrassment or another, or the odd run. I mean, they've managed to get to the quarterfinals a couple of times before, but that's been it. And on both quick cases, kind of fell out after bad second legs against Fenerbahce and Salzburg. The case against Salzburg, a complete collapse. And basically, they've just never been able to fight on two fronts. So one of the things Baroni's done brilliantly is, and I think it's helped that this the makeup of the squad has changed so much that it's not reliant on superstar players like your Immobile, your Milinkovic-Savic, Felipe Anderson. These guys who formed the complete backbone of Lazio's success in the last 5 or 6 years, they're all gone now, and the quality is lower in the squad. But because the quality is lower, there's a much smaller difference between who's on the bench and who's starting, which has allowed Baroni to be much better at spreading minutes across the team, keeping more players match fit, match sharp, because they're all getting more opportunities. And so that's resulted in him having far more success than any of us expected. The start of the year, Lotito, the first game of the season, I still remember I was there. It was awful atmosphere because everyone was protesting against Claudio Lotito. He was perceived to have been far, not nearly ambitious enough, basically losing a coach like Maurizio Sarri with the CV he's got and replacing him with a guy who's just had half a good season in a relegation battle. That's how it was seen. Not saying I'm necessarily totally agreeing with that view. And then a transfer window where they brought in a fair few players, but a lot were gambles and a few were kind of, you know, from lower table clubs and not particularly setting the heather on fire, let's say. So I think that he's impressed in terms of what he's done domestically and in Europe, the way he's managed to balance both competitions. The style of football, particularly at the start of the season, was really, really entertaining to watch. But he's now in a period where more questions are being asked of him than ever before. The 5-0 against Bologna was pretty unacceptable on many fronts. The team is clearly tired mentally and physically. They've just had 4 away games in their last 5, and all these fixtures piling up, injuries piling up to a lot of players in the squad. But there's still no real excuse for a performance like that in a game that's that important. And it's also not the first time. I mean, I was there also when Lazio got thrashed 6-0 by Inter not too long ago. But in big games this season, they just haven't shown up. There have been a couple of exceptions. They've been weirdly good against Napoli, and they managed to get that win against Milan, but obviously very strange circumstances around Milan at that time. Otherwise, they lost the derby convincingly. They've been beaten by Juventus, beaten by Fiorentina, and now beaten by Bologna heavily, beaten by Inter. They're not able to perform in these big Serie A games. And it's ultimately going to cost them, not only because of the points that they're throwing away to rivals in this top four race, but also that if it ends up in a head-to-head tiebreaker, there's nobody who they're going to finish ahead of. And that is not an unlikely situation. So, yeah, he's certainly under pressure over this international break to come up with an answer to why this team is on a downward trend, how to get them out of this slump, how to get the defence to actually keep a clean sheet ever, because they're conceding. They're 12th in the Serie A table for goals conceded. So he's basically, in summary, had a far better start than anyone expected, but there's a lot of questions around whether he can continue that or whether this season's about to fall apart completely in the final couple of months.
Well, that's it from me, David Freeney, this week. Big thanks going out to Alistair McKenzie for joining us from Rome. Also to Destination Cultural senior writers Emma Gates and Dan Cantian. You can contact us on our personal X accounts. Let me guess, it's @Dan_Cantian.
Correct.
@EmmettGates.
See?
Very clean. Mm-hmm. I'm @DavidFarini_. So I've done my research here for this one at least. So, or @DSTNCulture. That is the Destination Culture X handle for everything Italian football and culture as well. Be sure to join us every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Cultural FC podcast will be there weekly. Don't forget you can also watch the action, Serie B action, as well as the highlights, full match replays on the DCTV app. Go and get it iOS and Android or @tv.destinationculture.com. The proud official Serie B broadcasters. Stick with us every weekend on our socials. The destination is always Calcio.